Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of our Daggerheart, The Last Arcanist origin stories. Today, I have with me a individual that I've been very much looking forward to diving into their character's backstory, a little bit of life before the events of the unraveling. So I'm going to pass it over to them pass it over to him, and we'll go ahead and get started.
Hi, everyone. I'm Thomas McGinnis. I'm a Northern Irish and Canadian game writer, and I'm very excited to be here.
Awesome. Sweet. So we got Thomas joining us, and we're going to be diving into Roisin's origin story today. I am Kylie Rose, your storyteller, your game master, whatever you want to call it. And I will be the guide as we dive into this story today. So buckle up, be ready, and we got a little tale to tell you. Light. It's the first thing we see when we enter the world, and oftentimes the last. And hopefully, in each of those moments, surrounded by people who care about us. For life and death is a significant time in one's life. It is one of those moments where our story begins, as we find ourselves within a grand bedchamber on the seventh floor of the House Dubois Palace, which resides in the kingdom of Helwyn. We see in this room a double door opening to a balcony where warm light from the setting sun along the Canwen Sea casts these magnificent colors of reds, orange, and yellows against the tapestry that lines this massive bed. Laying there, pillows propped behind his back, is Prince Alexander. In a way so he can enjoy the view, listen to the sounds of crashing waves, and smell the crisp sea air wafting into his chambers. We see his face is highlighted in a golden hue, extenuating his honey-colored skin and his sharp features. His wavy brown hair rests on his shoulders, fine and shiny, and his eyes a piercing emerald green. Yet in his beauty, how we see him now is not how he truly looks, as light can also manipulate what we see. As the evening sun starts to set, fading along the horizon, we witness Prince Alexander as he looks now. As the light in his bedchamber shifts from warm to cool, we see a gaunt face, his skin pale and sallow. His dark brown hair that was once glowing with the sun is unkempt and wiry. His eyes no longer a piercing emerald green, but pale and tired. Yet, in this exhaustion, there's a smile upon his face as he looks down at his hand that's intertwined with another's. He squeezes it tenderly before his gaze moves to meet the eyes of the person he's sharing this moment with. Thomas, could you describe what we see in this moment?
Yes, so laying next to Alexander is Roisin, the most beautiful man you could ever imagine, with ivory skin, long rosy hair, and just like his lover, eyes of emerald green, as he's just laying next to him, gently holding his hand, stroking his thumb over his lover's knuckles, just taking in these precious moments between them.
As your eyes are locked, you would see his smile widen a bit wider, his canine kind of poking out right underneath. It gets like cut on his lip. Something that often happens when his mouth is a bit parched. And he says to Roisin, "As I sit here and reflect on the life I have had, I don't think there's much that I would change. But I would be lying to you if I said there was nothing I regret. And something I fear now I will not have the strength to write."
"Oh, whatever could it be, my lover?"
he would take in a deep breath and he would say, "There is someone that I must tell them that the truth of their life, the who they are, and that the life they were given is in a way false, and it's in large parts due to my family's desire for gain within the Ardalan Empire. But I do not have the strength to meet with her. But if I could request one thing, Roisin."
"Anything?"
I think at that point he loosens his hand holding Roisin's and puts it up to his face. And he says, "Could you please find her for me? Deliver this message and let her know the truth. What my family did, took from her."
"You know, this wasn't exactly how I pictured our day anymore, but I can't say no to you ever, can I? Not like this."
I think as you say that, he just kind of just, as he holds Roisin's face, he kind of rubs underneath the chin a bit. And he says, "Well, you are your own person, and you can decide ultimately what you do. But I think we both know."
"Well, I suppose if needs must, and someone has to be the cutting heroic figure this time, then I suppose I can clean up nicely for it."
I think that you see, like, in you saying that to him, the smile widens more, and but then you would feel almost this, like, his hand, you would feel, like, along your face, you would feel it shaking as kind of his energy levels are diminishing. And
my hand would immediately leap up to his in order to help steady it.
Mm-hmm. And I think he would at that point just hold tighter almost, and just, like, as you steady it, he would almost, like, hold it tighter. And he would eventually, next to the bed you would see that there is almost like a little nightstand. And with his other hand, he would reach over and he would grab this this letter that is wax sealed with his insignia upon it. And he would place it on, I think he'd probably place it on Roisin's lap and say, "I know this is asking a lot, and I wish I could go with you to deliver it. But I think we both know that is unrealistic."
"Well, you have given everything, lover, so it's only fair that I give what little I can back to you. If this is your request, then in my name as Lenan Shi, I will see it through."
He takes in a deep breath and He smiles again. And I think at that point, you would feel the hand kind of drift along your face, Roisin. And he would kind of like push himself up a little bit more and would say, I know where she's planning to be. She's, I learned from the tavern keep when I was visiting the city of Telfrin. She, her name is Hafina Irwood. She's a traveling bard. She is, should be within the city in a few days, and it will take some time to get there. I can arrange a carriage. I don't know if you prefer to traverse it yourself by foot or your other means, but it will be a bit of a journey to get to her.
Well, if subtlety is required, then a carriage might be more convenient than my own means of travel. Mm-hmm. But I do have a request of my own. Mm-hmm. Because I'm being so incredibly generous doing all of this for you, I would like to request that upon my return, I am gifted one kiss.
Ooh, I think, go ahead, I'm going to have you make a roll right now for this, because this will determine a couple things. So go ahead, I'm going to say make a presence roll for me. And I'm going to say too, I will actually give you advantage because, so a D6, add an additional D6 to this roll.
Okay, thank goodness for advantage. Since it is 6 plus 2, 8 plus 6, it's going to be a 14 with fear.
Okay, 14 with, so, and then your plus 2 for your presence too, so I think that's 16 with fear. Okay. I think he looks at you and his hands would move up to Roisin's face and he says, I do not want to wait. And I think he would go in for the kiss now, if that would be okay with Roisin.
I think Roisin is going to wait for him to get just a breath away and stop him and whisper, you can wait until I come back. And you will be here when I come back.
I think as you say that, he acknowledges it, but I think you know him enough where within his eyes, there is some fear that he might not be here when you get back.
Just consider it a wee bit of motivation for you.
He just nods and he says, so I will arrange a carriage for you, and if you need to use my house name, you can, as that will give you some favor, I suppose. Don't be gone too long, please.
I'll do my best, but you know how it is. absence does make the heart grow fonder.
You have such a way with words.
Why, thank you.
So true. I think he just like takes him by the chin and then places his hand back and just holds Roisin's hand for a little bit longer. As you see, he kind of is dipping in and out of consciousness at this point. And I would say just from earlier when he placed the letter down, there was a weight to it. I think you would have noticed that as he places it down. But he just lays there for a moment and he kind of comes back to, and you would hear a knock on the door, and walking in, you would see a servant for the House Dubois. They would be holding like what looks like a nice kind of formal attire that they would lay across the bed, and they would look over to the two of you, and they would say, "Prince Alexander, you have a dinner that you're meant to be to, do you need?" And she would like look over at Roisin, back at Prince Alexander. "Do you need us to aid you with getting dressed, or is that something that you can do on your own?" And I think he's still holding Roisin's hand, and you'd say, "I think that we can manage." And she says, "Very well. Could you please just need to be ready in about 30 minutes, please?" And she would turn around, and as she's walking towards the door, he would say, "Vin, could you please arrange for the carriage to be ready for Roisin here as soon as possible?" You would see she would nod, and she'd walk out the door, leaving you two there again as it closes. And you would start to hear the sound of banter and music happening outside as guests start to arrive for some type of event happening here tonight at the House Dubois Palace. And he would look back to Roisin and say, "I'm going to miss having you here tonight, but I think this matter is more important than this party."
"Well, of course you're going to miss me. I'm delightful."
"You are very delightful. You always bring out the best in me, so."
"Oh, that much is true, but no time to be distracted. You have a lovely fete to at hand, and a suit that we'll have to fit you in." "I promise I won't be too handsy this time."
"All right. Well, I don't mind." And from there, and you see too, it's like a, it would be more of a robe. There's a few like sashes and things to really kind of hug the waist, that kind of flow down behind the back. It would very much be, made of like a light silk, as it is a little warmer in this area, specifically being by the ocean. It does get a little cooler during the winter months, but it is a little bit of a warmer evening, so it's kind of this silken robe that with kind of the sash around the waist. It would be this like almost like midnight black, and then the with touches of golden embroidering upon it, and then the sash itself would be of this like almost like a crimson red that would wrap around. And you would see he kind of starts to get up, a little weak, and he'd walk over and kind of rub his hand against it. And I think he would look at Roisin and say, what's been your favorite memory that we've shared together?
How can I pick just one? But if I had to pick one, since you're asking, it would have to be the moment I stumbled into one of these vets and saw a lovely young man reciting his poetry to absolutely no one else. Repeating it over and over to himself in the hallways, trying to work up the courage to tell someone else, to perform to the crowd. It was cute.
You always like to bring that one up.
It was very endearing. How can I resist it?
Well, I think that it is quite funny that you bring that moment up. I think for me it was not the initial conversation we had when I first met you. I think it was when I was up there, finally having the courage to speak these words. Something that has been very important to me, and oftentimes, I lost my connection to it for a time after Mother passed. But she would always look at me a certain way, and when I would recite it and would give me notes and encourage me to continue to pursue it, she always said that poets are an important part of this world. But I lost sight of that for a time. But it was that evening when you encouraged me. You helped breathe life back into that feeling that I had when I really first started to love it. And when I looked across to see you, you were all I really saw amongst the crowd of people. And I felt in that moment no one else mattered. It was for you. And I just want to thank you for that. It has made my life better. You have made my life better.
You are a candle, my lover, and your work shines light in the darkness, and you have shone very brightly indeed. If only half as long, but those are the deals we make for greatness.
It's true. Well, he tries to stand up a little straight. You see his legs slightly buckle, but he steadies himself. Well, I suppose a few more nights of greatness to be had. And I think he would start putting on his robe and his sash. I think he would like kind of like move over to have you help him like tie it properly. I think as he finishes up, he would walk over towards the balcony, rest his arms up on the railing that wraps around. And it's a pretty big balcony, one that you could definitely stand on. There's like some small little, basically like little stools essentially that you can sit and just kind of take in the sun on a sunny day. But he puts his arms on it, and as that kind of fading light of the sun dissipates. The stars start to appear in the sky. A small crescent moon this evening. And then he looks back to Roisin and he says, "It is hard to imagine a more beautiful view than this." And you see just kind of overlooking the city and the ocean in the distance, sound the crashing waves. And but as he says that, he says, "Well, that was until I met you."
You're not so bad with words yourself.
I try. But I have a good teacher. I think at that point he kind of steadies himself and walks over to Roisin and just rests his forehead on his.
Roisin just leans into the sensation. Mm-hmm. Treasures it.
I'll see you when you return.
Glad you will.
And he lets go. And I think there's that whole, like, he's holding holding his hand, and eventually like, the fingertips release and he walks towards the door and out. And you see Vin comes back and she says, "Oh, Master Roisin, your carriage is waiting."
"Thank you, Vin." And as Roisin goes to leave the room, he just looks back to the bed that they share together, mm-hmm. just takes a deep breath and says, "Parting is always such sweet sorrow," and leaves.
Okay. So, as you descend down the stairs, you hear this cacophonous sound of people speaking as more members of status arrive. You see, you actually see the members of the noble of House Gladys arriving, them followed by their guards, the Ardalan, the rulers of the Ardalan Empire, House Gladys's companions, partners with House Dubois, as they have helped them gain power over the years. You would see kind of off in the distance as you round this corner to head outside of the palace where the carriage is waiting. You would see Prince Alexander in conversation. His smile, this regality about him, this confidence that wasn't there for a long time, but even in this moment where it's fleeing him, he still holds on to that. And that would be kind of what Roisin would see as he walks out the door to the carriage awaiting, where you would see the another servant kind of waiting, door open, waiting for you to go on, and then the ready to go as you walk towards. And I would say as you walk out of the palace, it's like this long kind of this long walkway. It's all this like beautiful marble stone. There's these pillars along the side, and there's like almost like what would be the equivalent of like an affinity pool that kind of just like looks like it's always kind of pouring. You would see that there is kind of, and then in the center of it would be the crest of House Dubois. But at the end, there's a stairwell that heads down to where the carriage resides. And you just see behind you this kind of massive 12-story 12-story tall palace, more people arriving as the door closes. And it is open window as well, as you hear the sound of the footsteps of the horses, and they start to take you outside of the city. As the carriage leaves, the wheels moving over these sand-covered cobblestone of Halloween here, you would be getting close to reaching the gate that exits out of the city limits. When you hear a familiar sound echoing throughout the city, the bells of the Grand Cathedral. These bells, though, only ring when someone of great importance has passed, and the number of chimes declares the significance of this individual. Council members of the Kingdom of Halwyn receive 3 tolls. High-ranking religious members of various religious organizations toll 5 times. And members of the royal family garner 7 tolls. As the carriage moves out through the gate, you continue to hear the chimes as 3 strike. You get a little bit further, where you start to reach the winding hills of Bryn. You hear a 5th. And as you kind of like come up over the hill, the sound still echoing, you hear a 6th bell. And as the city, the kingdom of Halwyn, starts to leave eyesight, the light from the various torches and things illuminating it, you hear a 7th bell toll as the carriage goes down over the hill, as you start making your way towards the small city of Telfrin.
It's a terrible coincidence. Nothing more.
Yeah. So yeah, I was going to say, as Roisin hears the 7th bell toll, what is he thinking? What do we see in this moment as you leave?
Roisin is just counting the chimes on his fingers, nervously, sort of anxiously, touching them against each other. And by the time the seventh bell rings out, all he can think is, I've been promised, so this must just be someone else. It's just bad timing. Must be.
As he thinks on that, this thought going through his mind, just bad timing. It's odd. You start to leave behind the scent of salt and sea that is very familiar to you from spending time in the city of Halwyn, until you reach the golden sands, and kind of like, it almost looks like the rolling hills of Bryn almost look like golden sands and crashing waves, as it's just this like golden grass that sways with the wind. It's this like vast expanse of undulating green and golden grass just swaying and moving across these pastures here. The journey through this space is rather peaceful. Lots of time to think and contemplate as you leave. By carriage, it's about a day and a half travel to the city of Telfrin. You would move through these narrow pathways, these dirt pathways kind of threading between hills crowned with wildflowers and the occasional shepherd tending to his herd, or to their flock rather. And you would hear occasional, there are small little villages scattered about, kind of just tiny little communities where you hear the sound of church bells chiming throughout, just kind of like hearing bells again, almost like if they're following you. And eventually, as these rolling hills begin to flatten, the terrain takes on a darker, more foreboding tone as you reach the Getten Marsh. The road becomes more treacherous. Wooden planks and ancient stones have to be traversed with precision as you feel the carriage slow down, the horses steady. You actually see at one point he has to get out and place a plank down so that the horses can safely pass over this terrain. Mist clings to the surface here, curling around these like gnarled black willow trees. You hear strange calls of unseen creatures within this space as the mist and light play tricks on the eyes, as they often do. But as you traverse on, the smell of decay and muck from being in the marsh starts to subside as you come up over another hill again, and you see sprawling wheat fields. Golden waves again swaying with the breeze, and you kind of see in the distance a mountain range with small little peaks. You see livestock that dot the field, cows, sheep, and chickens. And as you get closer, the road widens a bit, and you would see the opening to this landlocked, much different than where you were just at, city of Telfrin. I would say that you would know enough, just from your travels and conversations, you would know that Telfrin is known for, it's a city of artisan and laborers. It has very much like vernacular architecture, taking whatever resources and any resources and material that they have to make their homes, their buildings out of. So you see a combination of stone, wood, whatever they can find. You do see, and they also, you would tell that definitely they quarry stone here as well. As you head into the space, you see all the roofs of the homes are thatched or tilled with slate. Definitely some of the marsh's influence here as well, used to like reinforce the beams, kind of taking some of the material from the marshes. You would see along the walls, though, of all the shops are these colorful depictions of farmers harvesting wheat, kind of telling stories of labor and abundance. You would see as you navigate through within the market square here, this you would see musicians and performers just enjoying life. It is, I would say, at this point, heading into evening because of the time you left and kind of just traversing through the marshes. And you would see, I think, as you go up to the location that you were given by Prince Alexander, the Gilded Tankard is the name of the tavern that you were given. You see along the wall of it, this building is made up of all these varying stone pieces, and it depicts this beautiful, essentially like this, it's this mural of the Nifon River, and it's like a sunset that stretches across, and it's absolutely masterful work. But as you like, you stop, the carriage stops here. You would see people of the city at this point. It's the end of the day. People are coming in from working out in the fields, tending to livestock. There are some people here, smiths, various artisans all across the spectrum. You would see people moving in, enjoying their time, but the carriage stops right outside of the Gilded Tankard. As Roisin kind of sees all of this right now, after kind of traveling through the rolling hills, the kind of tough day through the marshes, what's going through Roisin's mind as you've reached your destination at this point, in this moment?
I think Roisin's natural instinct is just to sort of take in and admire all the beauty around him. Just Roisin is someone who can see the beauty in almost anything, and just even in sort of the tedium of the laborer's hard work that he sees as he passes by the various artisans tending to their crafts, just the effort and the dedication within every single piece that they make, the effort in even just like in the smell of the dust and the air, all of it has just a romantic quality to him that he just can't help but appreciate.
As you take that in, and yeah, you see there's so much, yeah, there's so much beauty in that, the process. I think anyone that's an artist can understand that the process is, well, can be difficult sometimes, is also the most rewarding. And as a door opens up, you see the exterior, the golden tankard, or the gilded tankard rather, sorry. And I think you see just that again. There's this, the image, the mural on this tavern. We kind of see the one of the sunset, but there's another one like as near the entrance of it where you see this like jovial feast tank, these brass tankards being hit together. You would see, it's almost like a culmination of everything that makes Telfrin what it is. You see artisans, you see performers, you see the wheat fields. But as you get closer to the building, you notice that on each of these stones, there's all these smaller images on it of other pictures of things throughout this place, as it is again a mosaic. As you see one thing and you see all these other smaller pieces of art in history and the passion poured into making this piece, as you walk towards it. Entering in, you would see it is lively. It is alive with energy. There are people singing to one another. There are kind of along the, as you walk into the tavern, you see like exposed wooden beams. It's like a split level tavern. You would see some people like sitting up top, their feet swinging along. Probably shouldn't be up there because, you know, have a few too many ales. You see that the main hall within the tavern is lined with these communal tables. And then you would see like along the back left wall is the bar, and it's made out of this like slab of dark oak, polished to a gleam. And you would see all these brass tankards hanging along the top, some of them with names of people, frequent flyers, if you will, of the tavern. But you would notice this small stage tucked in the corner that hosts bards and traveling performers, and the backdrop of another painted mural, it depicting this roaring hearth where the embers never fade. And the air itself within here smells of roasting meats, fresh baked breads, ale, some refreshing smells of ale. Then there's kind of the underlying stale ale that just seems to seep into the floor. And there's just the constant hum of conversation within this space. But as you come in, you would definitely get a few looks towards you. A couple of people taking sips and just kind of wiping the foam off their face. But you would see a bartender, the tavern keep going and pouring drinks and calling out to other servers for food. They would look over to you. Do you need a drink or are you all good? Could we grab you anything?
Oh, No, thank you. I'm well fed.
Oh, all right. Well, more for everyone else. Everybody's like, just starts, and she just goes and starts filling more tankers. And then you would see at that point, walking on to the stage are a few musicians. These ones in particular are holding stringed instruments. And from there, you would see walking up to the tavern, or sorry, up to the stage rather, you would see this woman. She's stands about a little over 5 feet tall. She has kind of pale blue skin with like hyperpigmentation that stretches up kind of around up her face, like up to her forehead, where you see these horns jutting out. She has flowing, curly, dark blue hair. She has golden eyes. Her ear is kind of a little sharp at the ends. She's wearing this elegant blue gown with this like silver shawl upon her shoulders. And you, as she takes that stage, the tavern itself grows quiet. As if she, without saying anything, you see that she commands an audience. Her presence pulls focus to her. And you would see someone come up to the stage and introduce her. As they would walk up. Good evening, everyone. We have a very special guest this evening, traveling many miles to entertain you all this evening. The lovely, the one and only, Hafina Irwad. And there would be a little bit of clapping, but it's very soft. As she walks up, and you start to hear the string instruments begin to play, and her voice is ethereal. You can see that if someone could put people into a trance with their voice, this is someone that could do that. And it's not, I would say that you know that it is not magical. It is just something about her voice and just the beauty, the pain within the lyrics. It is captivating. And you would just see people locked in on her. In this moment, Roisin, I want to have you roll make a knowledge check for me in this moment to try and recall. I think through your travels and conversations with Prince Alexander to see something you might glean from this moment.
Oh, this is a crit. 2 threes.
What? Oh, hell yeah. Amazing. Okay. So a crit. Dope. Okay. As she sings, kind of during that conversation, this letter that you hold on you in this moment, you have heard stories of a woman from generations ago, a noble woman from from House Nist, and you would recall that she is a woman of Infernus ancestry, which is who this person is of that ancestry as well. And it would dawn on you that there was a woman a couple generations ago that was known to be able to calm armies, to end conflict with her voice. And in that moment, thinking back to what Prince Alexander had said, this request, there's something that clicks for Roisin in that moment. House Nyst was wiped off. It was wiped out. The family usurped. House Gladys took over the city where this kingdom resided of House Nyst. Of Caradoc is the name of that specific city. And the heir was allegedly killed during this. But as you look at this person and you hear her voice, I think it starts to register into you what you hold carries a big weight. It could change the future of this empire forever. As you sit with that, what is he thinking?
For a brief moment, sort of the tension and anxiety that he has been carrying with him along this trip sort of fades away and disappears for a moment, because now he has this new, exciting, bright and shiny thing in front of him, a new rabbit hole to just dive down completely. So in his seat, he's just going to lean forward a bit and try to make eye contact with the woman as he sort of extends out his affect. And there's sort of this lingering rosy scent that begins to fill up the space of the audience, the whole tavern almost, as he's going to reach out. And for a moment, I think he's going to try to enthrall the woman.
Okay. Amazing. So you're going with Enrapture? Was that?
Okay. But whatever the ability's name is.
Yes, Enrapture. Okay, cool. Enrapture. I think Enthrall works. Also, Enthrall out is great too. That's why I'm pretty sure that's amazing. So as you do that, go ahead. So this is a spellcasting role. Okay, perfect. So go. I will say, her evasion. You need to be 11 for this to work.
Quick question: because I crit, do I also get a hope from that?
Oh yes, you. Yeah.
Brilliant. And if I wanted to use an experience as well with this,
I would let you. I think you could in this moment. So what explain to us, because experiences, and I'll say this to the audience member real quick, experiences essentially are things tied into the character's backstory, kind of elements of them. So what experience is Roisin using in this moment to help gain to possibility of this?
Roisin is going to use his experience of wandering muse to try to connect with this woman as an artist to a muse. And sort of that shared bond between them.
Okay. All right. Big roll.
Minus 5, 14 plus 2 is 16. Plus 2 again because of the experience. That would be an 18 with hope.
With hope. Oh my God. Insane. As she continues to sing and she's kind of reaching that apex of the song, your eyes connect and you see something that is often a partial indication of that tether being made, is you see that smile. And like Prince Alexander, her canines, which are a little sharper, I will say, because of her ancestry, you see it kind of gets caught, like the mouth almost gets a little dry from it. And She continues singing, though, kind of her eyes still on you. And as the song comes to an end, the audience cheers. And she bows to them. And I think immediately she makes her way towards you. And she approaches, and she would wave over to the bartender to bring her a drink. And she leans up against wherever Roisin is. And she takes the glass of wine, and she says, "And who might you be?"
"I am either the best thing you have ever seen, or the bearer of the worst news you'll ever receive. I'm very curious which one it's going to be."
"Well, I hope it's the first." She takes a sip of it. And she places the glass down, or the wine glass down. And she says, and she'd reach her hand out to shake Roisin's. "Hefina Earlwood is my name. It is a pleasure to meet you."
Roisin will take the hand and place a gentle kiss on the knuckles and say, "Roisin, it's a pleasure to meet you, sweetling."
She picks up her glass, takes another sip. "So, you caught my attention from afar."
"That tends to happen."
"It takes a lot for me to be pulled towards someone so quickly. I tend to find myself a bit guarded. I have to be traveling. Of course, I have my bandmates, but the road can be difficult and challenging, and sometimes comes with dangers that I find myself not particularly fond of. But people have learned to not mess with me." And you see, like, she, like, reaches, and you would see she has, like, hidden underneath, she has a dagger.
A purest flower would be the thorn.
Very true. I have to protect myself. But, so, what do I owe the pleasure?"
"Well, the pleasure is because of this," he says as he pulls out the missive and hands it over.
Okay. I think she actually just, like, takes her dagger out. She just slices it open, and she puts it back in the little sheath. And I think you would see she has a, like, leather band that goes around, that kind of hugs, like, right underneath, right underneath, like, where her sternum would be. And she slides it back in, and kind of covers it again with the shawl that she's wearing. And she takes a moment to read it. You can see it's a pretty long letter, to her. Do you think Roisin would try to read over her shoulder as she reads this letter?
"Oh, you know, that would be a bit of a breach of trust and, you know, probably a wee bit rude to do, but he's definitely doing that."
Okay, amazing. Okay. I'll say because of your, because you crit on that roll, I'm going to say she doesn't. She's still so focused that. So, I will read the letter in its entirety. "Lady Hefina Earlwood, while I have not had the pleasure of meeting you in person, I have known of you for many years. As a child, you were taken from your home and your family. It was during this time that you were presumed dead by the people of the Caradoc Kingdom, as your house and family were slain in the name of the Ardalan Empire, ruled by House Glatis. Your family was painted as worshippers of the twilight, plotting to bring darkness upon these lands by my very own house and father, the André Dubois, spread through lies and deception. They were afraid of what you could do if you were given the opportunity to lead, as many believe you were the heir amongst all the houses that would unite the people across the kingdoms and bring peace to the realms of Ardalan. With this threatening House Gladys, power over the Ardalan Empire and my house's desire to advance for their own means amongst the kingdoms, they did what they thought was necessary to make sure you never had such an opportunity. It was my mother, Elise, who stopped you from being killed. She brought you to live with the Verdant Fellowship within their orphanage for displaced children. She was a good woman, and I miss her dearly. She stopped by frequently for several years to make sure you were well taken care of. She chose your name that you go by now. But your true name, which bears your claim to the kingdom of Caradoc, is Marwyn, heir to House Nist. I am sorry I cannot be there to inform you myself. But as I write this, my days amongst the living are coming to an end. But I could not take my last breath knowing that you were still out there, still alive, and capable of fulfilling what you were destined to do. And this next piece would confirm your knowledge from earlier. My mother would tell me stories about your great-grandmother, Rhiannon, being able to calm battlefields of soldiers at war with the sound of her voice. So when I heard you sing some time ago within the warm interior of the tavern, it was the first time I had an idea of who you were. And then, please forgive my lack of haste to not inform you sooner, but there are many watchful eyes and ears at work. Secret societies looking to squash any aspects of hope across these lands. And then you would see this part. Yet the person delivering this letter to you is someone I trust with my life. And can say with full confidence, you will be safe with him. It was vital to gather evidence so you can have a chance to claim what is yours and unite the people. I fear there is something dark that lingers beyond the veil that has latched its hands upon the Ardalan Empire and those in power. Keep this letter safe, Princess, and trust in yourself. Long live House Nist. And you would see Alexander's signature. She would close the letter. That is a lot to take in.
Quite a bit. How do you feel?
I think you would see her sit down and kind of slump a bit in the chair. I don't know what it is, but there was always something I felt, a piece of myself that was missing. And a lot of my songs reflect that. I had a feeling that I had so much more purpose than
traveling these lands, singing in these taverns. While it has led me to meet many amazing people, I know my destiny, whatever you want to call it, is not this. And by this, I mean, and she looks around the tavern. And I think she would look at the letter one more time and then look at Roisin and say, can I trust his words? You knew him well?
Better than anyone else. He trusted me with his life, and one day I will be the one to take it. No greater bond than that. But tell me something. What is it that you want? I mean, look around. Crowds of people adoring you already. Couldn't this be enough?
It was for a time. But as I have traveled to many places, I have seen things that I, and she would hold the letter, that I know now I could stop. There are people suffering because those in power refuse to share the wealth of these lands. And I feel that if I just fade behind the curtain, like I do most nights, I'm no better than these people. I have the opportunity to make change. I think she looks at the letter. But I'm going to need help.
You don't want to fade into the darkness. You want to burn brightly.
I do.
Brighter than anyone else.
I want to be a beacon. The light in the darkness.
At what cost?
I would give my life for these people.
Very well, then. Well, take some time to think about it, of course, but... And, well, I've done my part. Filled my end of the bargain, delivered your message, but... If this is truly what you desire, then in a few days' time, come visit me at the Dubois Palace, and we can have a wee chat about your greatness and what you desire. And I promise you that if you still want this, I will make it happen. This I swear on my name. As Lin and she.
I think, as you say that, I'm going to say that's where we're going to end it, right there, on that note, because that feels like an epic moment to end it right there. And I think you would just see, she would nod. And that's where we'll fade away to let that thought linger. Woo! Wow. Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Amazing. Amazing. Heck yeah. Awesome. Well, that being said, that is the first of what I can imagine will be many origin stories here of our pal Roisin. Thomas, thank you so much for being a part of this. And check it out.
Although I do think I need to correct you on one last detail.
Yes.
That would be Roisin Dubois.
Okay. That's right. Roisin Dubois. All right. Amazing. Hell yeah. Awesome. So with that said, we'll sign off on that. So until next time, drink the water, eat the food, and we'll see you next time as you come escape the mundane for a little bit with us in the realms of Adelantia. We'll see you later, everybody. Bye-bye.